This Civic Media podcast is sponsored by UW Organ and Tissue Donation. Organ donations are desperately needed, and now is the right time to become an organ donor. Talk to your family. Get the dot. Save lives. Go to heroicdeed.com. The Patriotic Millionaires also purchase advertising time on various Civic Media stations throughout Wisconsin.
Time for a deep dive into the one issue that matters most in a capitalist democracy, money. This is Maggie and the Millionaires Talking Money, a joint production of the Maggie Dawn Show and the Patriotic Millionaires. Now, let's start talking money.
What's up, Wisconsin and beyond? My name is Maggie Dawn, host of the Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Every day at 3 p.m., we have a little segment we call Maggie and the Millionaires Talking Money. Because if you care about child care policy, you're actually talking about tax policy and wage policy. If you care about the border, say, if that's on your top 10 hit list, again, you're going to care about tax policy and wage policy. It all connects together. And folks, we got a great guest today to help us understand where we are at from a minimum wage perspective better. Her name is Emily Stewart. She's a senior correspondent at Business Insider, writing about business and the economy. Previously, she worked at Vox and The Street. She's here to talk about one of her favorite issues, at least one of mine. I hope you agree now, because we've been talking about it so much, the minimum wage. She spent years reporting on this stuff. She's a great one to help us understand it better. So why is the minimum wage an important issue to cover, Emily?
I mean, I think this is one where sometimes it kind of gets forgotten about, I think, like in the day-to-day for people, but also like in politics, it's been a big deal, right? You think about the fight for 15 in the last 10, 15 years, really talking about a $15 minimum wage. And that was a really big push. And it's also, I think, a politically popular push. A lot of states that are red states and blue states have really like a $15 minimum wage. When you ask voters if they like a $15 minimum wage, they say yes, including in places like Florida. At the same time, I think over the past few years, we've kind of stopped talking about minimum wage because I think a lot of focus has been more on inflation than it has been on what people are making, and especially low-wage workers. We have seen their wages rise, but at the same time, I think it's, you know, the federal minimum wage is $7.25 an hour. It has not been raised since 2009. That is a very long time. And as much as not a lot of people make $7.25 an hour anymore, some people do. And I think it's really hard in this day and age to sit around and say anywhere in the country that is a livable wage. That's really the poverty line, basically.
Yeah, it's stupid. Basically, and these are my words, not Emily's, of course. You do the math on that. It doesn't math. So we should call that a poverty wage, because people are going to be below the poverty level at that wage. Emily, how sustainable, either from a macro perspective or on a small business growth perspective, is a minimum wage at $7.25 an hour?
Yeah, so I think to talk through the math a little bit, $7.25 is about $15,000 a year. So that's less than a third of the median wage in the country. That's at the poverty line for individuals, obviously well below it for families. That is not a wage that we can live on. And again, like I think about a million people in the country now make at or below that wage, but that is not... it's not a livable place. And I think, you know, we also sometimes you think, well, you know, those are workers. And for, again, that's not most people, that's not me, but it's not good for the economy when people don't have money to spend. The consumers are really the backbone of the American economy. And if people are not making enough money to be able to go to the coffee shop to pay their rent, that's also bad for the coffee shop and for their landlord. And I think, you know, what we've also seen in some of the research suggests in the past several years is that when the minimum wage is higher and when a business pays a higher wage, that can ultimately be good for business. And they don't want to tell you that, right? But
right.
If you're paying better wages, that means your employees stick around. That means you get to save money on training, that you're not constantly trying to catch up and rehire. It's expensive to hire people. It's expensive to lose people. And so I think you know, it's one of those where every time there is chatter about raising the minimum wage, kind of businesses, you know, say the sky is falling. This is going to be a disaster. This will be a mess. And obviously they do that because if they could not pay any money, they probably would, right? I mean, not, but with some reason. But I think sometimes, you know, it's important to remember it's not just good for workers. Obviously, it's good for low-wage workers, but again, it's good for the broader consumer economy, and it's good for a business when you're paying workers enough that they're not running for the hills the second they get a better opportunity.
Yeah, I've had on numerous CEOs, Emily, to your point, that say as part of their corporate growth strategy, it was to pay workers more because they wanted workers that weren't crushed under the day-to-day stress of just not being able to make ends meet. They wanted people to feel motivated. They wanted people sharing in the wealth that they were, through their labor, helping to create. We got a text from Andrew in Maine asking how many people in America are making $7.25 an hour, which, of course, excludes the tipped workers because they don't even get minimum wage. And I think I heard you say somewhere in the ballpark of, was it a million or more?
Yeah, it's about a million workers. So it's about 1.3% of hourly workers in America. So it's not a lot of people, but it is enough people. And we didn't get into the tipped wage. And even, okay, if it's not 7.25, in some places it's still 8 or 9. And again, there are places where you can haggle about what is the right amount. I think it's hard to say $7.25, even $8, if you're trying to support a family. Like, that's a tough one.
Yeah, it really is. And again, I think, you know, I've said this, I've heard other CEOs and business leaders say this at base. If you must exploit a worker and pay them a wage that isn't even at the poverty level, perhaps your business model needs to be assessed as whether or not it's viable. It's just like, it's at base that that is what we're looking at. And there have seemed to have taken root this idea that, well, you should pay workers the absolute least amount you can get away with. That seems to be where, whether it's, you know, shareholders or activist investors or a board seem to look to cut. So when you hear those sorts of claims that, oh, we can't possibly raise the minimum wage because the businesses can't bear the cost, do you think the evidence bears that out, Emily?
I mean, it is. I think the past few years have shown us to some extent that's not true, right? We have seen this tight labor market that has really raised wages, especially for people at the bottom and the people who were the ones that their bosses were saying, we absolutely cannot pay these people more because if we do, the economy will get out of control and also everything will be a mess. And I think we've seen businesses have to pay more, right? Walmart, I think, now starts at $14 an hour. Target pays a much higher minimum wage. I mean, anecdotally, right, you walk down the street and you'll see a Wendy's and they're advertising $13, $14. So these companies can pay it because they are paying it. You know, I think also in the research, one thing that, you know, comes across when companies have raised minimum wage, okay, like what has happened? And where does that cost go? And some of it, you know, a little bit does go to consumer prices, but not a ton. And you can talk about maybe that feels like a worthwhile trade-off. Some of it also, you know, will cut in a little bit to profits. But we live in a world of shareholder primacy, right? Where the only thing that companies think about ever is make money for your shareholders. That's the, you know, end all be all of kind of the point of the business. But that doesn't have to be the end all be all of the point of the business. And if you're telling me that, I don't know, some big company is paying their workers a little bit better and that means their shareholders maybe aren't making as much money as they were, that feels like a good trade-off and one that we act like companies could never sacrifice profit. But what is it, I think when you back up a little bit, and this is a little ideological, but what is it? The shareholder doesn't have to be the only thing we think about. We can think about stakeholder capitalism.
There's a false choice built in there, right? It's that we can't have sufficient corporate profits to drive investments and shareholders to invest in businesses and buy their stock and pay workers fairly. And that is a false choice. We know that corporate profits across a number of sectors, and I mean the profit margin, not what they're spending in capital investments, not what they're spending on wages, not what they're spending on supply costs, has exploded since COVID. We haven't seen them bringing prices down. So we know that those margins have grown. They have choices about what to do with that. You can either pay off massive, huge billionaires like Warren Buffett in stock buybacks. You can return shareholder value in dividends, which is just a cash giveaway. Or you can help invest in workers, your capital infrastructure for the business, R&D, et cetera, et cetera. There are always choices being made. The false choice is what gets under my skin the most. Businesses can do both. Got a great text in, somebody from River Falls texting that the argument that they hear frequently and again is that minimum wage jobs are not meant to sustain a career or a family. They're meant for entry level workers. What's your response to that, Emily?
I mean, okay. Fine. Like, I think about this is a few years ago, I was at a different outlet and I was working on a story, talking to people making $7.25. And I heard that a lot from some, and sometimes they were 20 years old and they would say, well, this is just my first job and this is okay. But then they would say, oh, and also I have a coworker who is making this amount of money and is trying to support a family. And so I think pretending like these are completely different issues is like not reality for some people. There are still people in those low wage jobs when they do have families. And it's just, I mean, it is also, if you want the market to work, you want the market to work and you want people to make a living wage. And again, to be able to spend that money. And it's good for the economy that a 17-year-old has money to spend as well. But I do think to pretend that these are only entry-level jobs and that these jobs that don't merit a living wage is tricky because there are people who are trying to make a living on that wage, whether we like to acknowledge it or not.
Yeah, I think of a few things. First, that is not universally true. Second, whether we're talking about an entry-level worker or someone who's older, the point that you want living wages paid, wages that make life sustainable, is because it drives consumer demand. And it is the consumer demand which helps juice GDP, helps grow small business. Like, and unless you have a vibrant and healthy middle class, you're not going to have that consumer demand. That's the secret sauce. So this idea that we can sort of infinitely move towards more and more wealth and income inequality while maintaining economic growth over time, as it's been accelerating over the last 20 years, will hit a wall. We don't want to get there. The third thing I would say when somebody says, oh, well, minimum jobs are for entry-level workers. They're not meant to support a family. My response to that is, let me get this straight. It's totally fine as long as you can get away with it, because the 17-year-old doesn't provide meaningful frontline labor that your business depends on. Shame on you. It's like J.D. Vance's solution to childcare being like, well, just ask grandma. It'll all sort out. Come on, man. Folks, we're going to take a break. If the former president is still speaking when we come back, we're going to go to President Obama's remarks. Emily, I thank you for your time. I think he's still going to be going. So we're going to take some of President Obama's live remarks.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Episode of Maggie and the Millionaires Talking Money today. Wanted to make one last point about the minimum wage. Here's what's happens when you raise the minimum wage. Everybody else makes more too. So the idea that, like, oh, well, it's just for, you know, workers starting out and it's never meant to raise a family on it, that's a bunch of hooey. Everybody else ends up making more. This is about the dignity and value of labor, which is the economic driver of this country and every capitalist democracy. Let's go to former President Obama giving live remarks here in Wisconsin right now.
Hospitals were overrun. Donald Trump actually uttered the words, I do not take any responsibility at all. I am not sure any American president has ever said those words before. But that's his idea of freedom. I do what I want, and I'm not held accountable, and I'm not responsible for anything. We have a broader idea of freedom. We believe that true freedom gives each of us the right to make decisions about our own life. And it requires us to recognize that other people have the freedom to make different choices. And that's true even on the most contentious issues. I have always said there are good people of conscience on both sides of the abortion divide. I respect those whose faith tell them that this isn't something they support. But if we believe in freedom, then we should at least agree that such a deeply personal decision should be made by the woman whose body is involved and not by politicians. And most Americans believe that as well. Most Americans believe that as well, which is why it's been fascinating watching Donald Trump just tie himself into a pretzel on this issue. When he ran for president the first time, he said he'd support punishing women who got abortions. Then a few weeks ago, he tells women, "Don't worry, I'll be your protector." You heard Tim talk about how Donald Trump actually protected you. Roe versus Wade overturned. Trump abortion bans in 20 states. He's out there saying everybody wanted it this way. No, they did not. But Donald Trump may be confused about this. You can't be. You need to be clear about what's at stake here. Tammy Baldwin actually introduced a bill that would restore the reproductive freedom that women had for nearly 50 years. If Congress passes that bill, Kamala Harris will sign it into law.
Folks, this is Barack Obama, former president of the United States, speaking in Madison, Wisconsin, alongside Governor Tim Walz today. These are live comments from the former president.
It's an example of how, as frustrating as politics can be sometimes, and I know it can be frustrating. Look, I do not watch cable news. I really don't. There are times where I don't understand how we got so toxic and just so divided and so bitter, and I get why sometimes people just don't want to pay attention to it. And we all have friends like that. We have family members who are just like, you know, it's all a circus out there. I get that. But elections really do matter. Who you vote for matters. Not because it's going to change every problem we got. No president, no vice president, no senator, no governor is going to solve every problem. We're not going to eliminate poverty overnight. We're not going to change, you know, race relations right away. Right? We're born into history, and change takes time, and so sometimes I think we expect so much, and then we're disappointed when everything's not immediately solved, and we start thinking politics doesn't matter. But the thing is, what politics can do, what elections can do, they can make your life a little better, your neighbor's life a little better, or they can make it a little worse. And that little bit of better or a little bit of worse, that adds up. And sometimes I have to talk to people who don't think there's going to be a difference whether Kamala Harris or Donald Trump wins. And they're not bad people. They just don't think politics matters to their lives. And I have to remind them, you know, the Affordable Care Act, it didn't eliminate all problems with health care, but there are 50 million people who got health care that didn't have it before. There are...
Folks, that's Barack Obama giving comments live in Madison.
Who had pre-existing conditions, and it used to be they couldn't get coverage. If you had a sick kid, you know, with a chronic illness, you're a parent, you might not be able to get insurance for your child before the Affordable Care Act. And now you had to make a choice. Are you going to sell your house in order to get that child the care that they need? Imagine that. You don't have to imagine it. That's what was going on. That's not true now because of elections, because of politics. It made a difference to them. Some people in this auditorium saw a concrete benefit in their lives as a consequence of elections. I'll give you one more example. I want to really button this down. I'll give you another example. When I was president, last couple years in office, I took an interest in what scientists were saying, that with globalization and travel and growing populations, at some point, we were going to see a serious pandemic. So this is back in 14, 15, 16. So I said to my team, we need to get a plan together, just like we have one for natural disasters. You have to practice. You have to have a sense of how are you going to respond if there's a flood, a hurricane, an earthquake. And I said we need to do the same thing with pandemic. So we put together a playbook, and we consulted with all the experts, and then we had every agency talk about, all right, how are we going to work with the public health agencies in the states, and how are we going to deal with the schools? Do we keep them open? How long? What are we going to do in terms
folks,
of developing
folks, you're listening
vaccines?
To the Civic Media Radio Network. That is former President Barack Obama giving live comments alongside Minnesota Governor Tim Walz in Madison, Wisconsin at a rally for current Vice President Harris. We're going to take care of a little business here at Civic Media. We're going to come back. I'm going to be joined by President of Trek Bikes, John Burke. He's an independent, one of those voters. They're out there. We're going to talk about what's motivating him this election. That's up next on the Maggie Dawn Show on the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're an organ donor, right? Well, here's a tragic fact. Approximately 20 people die each day waiting for precious donated organs. You could make a life-saving decision simply by getting that important dot on your driver's license. That little dot shows those who need to know that you've made a decision to donate organs at a critical time. Go to heroicdeed.com to learn more about the importance of organ donation and how you can make your wishes known. Talk to your family. Get the dot. Save lives. HeroicDeed.com.
Lucy Liu with my girl Drew, Cameron D and Destiny, Charlie's Angels. Come on.
Welcome back, Wisconsin and beyond. Welcome if you're just joining us. My name is Maggie Dawn. I'm host of the Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. President Obama, he's like the Energizer Bunny. He's still going in Madison. We'll talk about that a little bit later tonight, I'm sure, with my co-host for a very special segment, Make Your Vote Count 2024. That starts at 6 p.m. tonight on this very network with Dan Schaefer, our political editor, creator of the Recombobulation Area. That's going to follow the Dom Salvia show, so you're going to want to keep it locked all afternoon. But right now, folks, I've got one of those independent voters. I thought they were like unicorns, but I've got one live in the flesh with me. And for all of you, of course, folks, you can watch me and all the great guests on YouTube, on the Civic Media's YouTube channel. You can also stream at Maggie Dawn Show on Instagram and Facebook. You can check out all my ramblings and rage tweeting on X, also at Maggie Dawn Show. But my very special independent voter guest is John Burke, president of Trek Bicycles. Welcome, John. Thanks for making time.
Maggie, thanks for having me.
What's it like to be one of these independent voters that we hear so much about?
Well, I think it's great. I also think it's good if you can come to your own conclusions instead of relying on a tribe to tell you what to think. So, I mean, that might work for some people, but for me, I also like to look at the candidates. I like to look at the issues, and, you know, then I can make up my own mind.
Yeah, I think that that's an idea that we all like to say, that we think independently, that we think critically, that we inform ourselves. But it actually requires some commitment to that, some work, right, to allow yourself to have some of those assumptions or groupthink challenge to be open to new information. Now, John, what I think is really interesting, I could talk to you about Trek bikes for a long time because I'm a long-time road bike person. I have bought Trek bikes my entire life. But I'm not here to talk about bicycling, though we'll have you back to do that sometime too. But what I wanted to talk about was this new book that you've got out, which I just think is so valuable. Because you come at this from a, like, let's check the assumptions at the door perspective. Folks, the name of the new book is called A Bold Plan for America. And you go through and identify what you think are America's 14 biggest problems. And you propose solutions that don't start from a place of party affiliation, right? Like, you don't assume that the party gospel is true. You go from what I call, like, the analytical ground up. Why did you think this book was important to write now?
Well, I think we're, I think we have a lot of frustrated American citizens. And I think we've been dumbed down by campaigns and political spending. And we've had people treat us like kids. And nobody talks about the facts. Very few people talk about the facts, and very few people have an actual plan. We're in the midst of a presidential election right now, and to be honest with you, neither candidate is really addressing the biggest issues we have as a country. So I said, you know what? I think we should step back and let's put the biggest problems that we have out on the table. Let's put all the facts for each one of those problems on the board. And what would the solutions be? And that's why I wrote the book. And I have a really good friend. He's a smart guy. And he's a staunch Republican. And he read the book. He said, I agree with everything in the book. He said, if you get smart people in a room and you put all the facts on the board, 90% of the time people will come to the same conclusion. And we have people ripping this country apart, dividing people in order to win elections instead of making decisions in the best interest of the American people.
Let me ask you a follow-up question to that, because I agree with much of what you're saying. Some of it, I think it's interesting to be in this particular political moment because you talk about putting facts on the board.
Right.
And what I've talked about a few times on the show is I have a rubric for this because you hear often from people, all politicians lie. They all frame, they all spin. And what I say is, all right, let's just not argue about whether or not that's true because let's just say it is because you can always draw issue with some of it. So let's assume that there's some lies out there. I often say to people, I want you to look at what the impact of the lie is and the acuity of the lie and the result that comes from the lie. In other words, not all lies are created equal. John, to what extent do you look at the political landscape now? And yes, I always want to start with good faith criticisms of the blue side of the spectrum, because that's where I more typically vote. And so I want to be always acting in good faith, accept those criticisms. But I think we're at a point in time where, yeah, there might be lies, but the impact, the acuity, and the result from those lies has reached a really existential level. And I want to get into these 14 problems, but let's just put that on the shelf because I don't think I can have a reasonable policy debate and dig into the facts and dig into the data and the results that we want to seek if I've got somebody that's lying to me about the peaceful transition of power. Are we at a different moment because of the, not just the lying, the acuity, impact, and result of the lies?
We are at a much different moment. This is the lying from Donald Trump is unprecedented in American history, period. And I don't care if you're a Republican, I don't care if you're a Democrat, 2 + 2 = 4. And this country has never seen anyone even close who's run for the presidency with this kind of lying. I mean, let's take a look at history. Dwight Eisenhower, George H.W. Bush, Gerald Ford, Ronald Reagan. I mean, you put all those people together and they don't have 10% of the lies of Donald Trump. It's embarrassing. And I've said this. I've voted for a lot of Republicans in my life. People should be, we should all be embarrassed. You know, and I say this, you know, the greatest honor one can have is to be a citizen of the United States. Mm. I mean, just think about that. Are you, I end the book with this line, being worthy of the title citizen of the United States. This is a great country. When you have a man out there who is lying to the magnitude that he is, and that he's dividing the people and tearing down our institutions, I don't care what side of the aisle you're on, stop. Yes. And you want to lead, you want to lead the very government that you're tearing down? You want to sit there and rip on people at the Justice Department, the FBI? You want to go in front of a group of leaders in Detroit and say that if Kamala Harris wins, the whole country's going to end up like Detroit? You want to talk about Arnold Palmer? I mean, come on, people.
Yes. Folks, that's John Burke, president of Trek Bicycles, a self-described independent author of the his newest book, A Bold Plan for America. So thank you for being really clear about that, because feel free to use my rubric, liar. It's very handy. It's a lie. What's its impact? What's its acuity? And what sort of results do we actually want to see and get? What does the lie get us? John, that I think it's really hard at this moment for, and I think Kamala Harris has tried to sort of triangulate back into this place where she's trying to open up the Democratic Party tent, right? She's trying to maybe do the thing that you're talking about. Now, doing it in a presidential election with these stakes in this moment, very difficult. But what I see, what I hope, is that by making the tent as welcoming and as big as possible, what the actual message is we can have these debates and discussions, and we should start by putting the facts up on the board for this, the nation's biggest problems, and dig into them. What do you think are the three biggest issues we've got?
Oh, okay. Well,
I know you picked 14, but you have a favorite three. Right. Yeah.
well, let's start out with a couple. I'll start out with the national debt. You have a $35 trillion national debt. Unprecedented in American history. And you have two candidates who are out there running for the highest office in the land who are talking about tax cuts. Are you kidding me?
Wait a minute, John. One's talking about tax cuts for households that earn less than $400,000 a year, as well as taxing stock buybacks, increasing the tax rates for the wealthiest 1%. I mean, like, when we talk about the deficit, we got to talk about both revenues and expenditures. I don't think it's fair to talk about a guy that wants to give corporations another, 28 to 15% tax cut without limiting that has no interest. They want to get rid of estate taxes for the ultra wealthy. They already get 20 plus million that they can give to. This is of a different scale. To say they both want tax cuts is not really a fair presentation, is it?
So here's my point. My point is this, is that we have two candidates running for the presidency, and neither one of them has a plan to deal with a $35 trillion debt, period.
Well, that's a different point, right? Like, I'll take that rhetorical point. Yes, agreed. They should have one. But to say that they both support tax cuts isn't the full picture,
I didn't
right?
say that. I didn't say that.
I thought you did, but my apologies, sir.
No. They both are spending their time handing out treats to the American public to try and earn votes. And neither one of them is dealing with the best long-term interest of the people, which is to put our nation's fiscal house in order. The only way you can do that is to raise taxes and cut expenses, period.
Yep.
That's
it. The old credits and debentures We got to make a balance. I don't believe that you actually have to have a balanced federal budget. There is some level of debt service that is sustainable, but we're approaching sort of these holy cow, and it's getting exponentially bigger.
We're there.
Every year. Yeah.
We're there.
This is one of the issues that I wish we actually spent more time talking about. So give me an example of some of the treats. Like, because I can name the three off the top of my head for Donald Trump. And I know Kamala Harris is glommed onto one of them. And we'll talk about that in a second. But like, no taxes on overtime, no taxes on tips, no taxes on Social Security. Well, if you've rigged the NLRB and you've gutted collective bargaining laws so that nobody gets any overtime anymore, like, what are you actually talking about? I don't want to be talking about tips. I think the federal wage, minimum wage, which shouldn't be $7.25, should be $20 an hour, should be for all workers. So let's get away from tipping because it's terrible and unsustainable and inequitable. And of course, the Social Security argument, it's like, oh, well, we got to do something about that too. Why don't we tax the $140,001 that people make instead of cutting off Social Security tax at that point? Am I in the ballpark, John, or is that all kind of water under the bridge?
No, you need to have an adult conversation, and you need to figure out how you can get the nation's fiscal house in order. And there's a presidential campaign going on right now, a supposed conversation between the candidates and the people. And what should be being discussed are tax increases and spending cuts.
But isn't she talking?
And that is not happening.
She is talking about tax increases. She's talking about tax increases on corporations, the ultra wealthy, estate taxes, the stock buybacks. I mean, those are big revenue generators. I love this conversation, John. I live
Great.
For these things. Thank you. That is my very special guest. His name is John Burke. He is the president of Trek Bicycles, an independent. I love having these discussions. I hope we're all enjoying it as much as John and I am. My name is Maggie Dawn. Keep it locked. We're going to come back with more lively, spicy discussion with John Burke after these brief messages here on the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Welcome back, or welcome if you're just joining us. My name is Maggie Dawn, host of The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Got a great guest this half hour. His name is John Burke. He is president of Trek Bicycles. He's an independent, and he and I are chopping it up over the issues. I love this so much. It is what the point should be. A good discussion of how much is enough, how much is too much, where do we draw the lines? Can we do all of these things at the same time? Policy choices. That's what it's all about. His new book is called A Bold Plan for America. He's also written three other books, one called One Last Great Thing, a memoir about his father, the founder of Trek Bicycles. He's also written 12 Simple Solutions to Save America, as well as the Presidential Playbook of 2020. John, thank you so much. I really enjoy being able to have these kind of conversations with folks because it's where the magic is, right? Like, we got to be able to chop through these things. I asked you, so you mentioned the deficit. We've been talking about that, needing to do better. I will always grant you the deficit at the scale it is unsustainable. We have to cut expenses and raise revenues. It is a both and solution, as most complex problems are. Sir, what are a couple of the top things that come to your mind and the ones that you've covered in your new book as well that you think are our big problems?
Yeah, I think one of the biggest ones is just our stance on the environment. Mm. I think we're seeing all sorts of global weather weirding whether it's the hurricane through North Carolina, whether it's playing golf in 70-degree weather in January in Minneapolis, whether it's a forest fire.
That's strange.
Strange. Really strange stuff. I mean, there was a forest fire a couple of years ago in Boulder, Colorado in December that took out 2,100 houses. And if you go back and take a look at it, because we're burning fossil fuels, the temperature on the earth has gone up 2 degrees in 100 years. It's be like, 2 degrees. Well, if your temperature is 98.6 and you crank it up 2 degrees, you're sick.
How do you feel? Yeah, I love that.
And so is our planet. And yeah. And right now, the scientists are saying that if we keep pouring carbon into the atmosphere, by 2100, the temperature is going to be another 2 to 4 degrees. And the ramifications, just add that onto your body temperature, the ramifications are off the charts. And, you know, here's one of the things I don't think we talk about enough, and that is American leadership. Mm. And if you take a look at American leadership, we led the world with democracy. We were the deciding factor in World War I. We were the deciding factor in World War II and putting the world back together again. There we were with the Marshall Plan. There we were with the Cold War. We kept it together. There we were with the race to space. There we were with things like the internet. America has always led. If you take a look at the biggest issue we face over the next 50 years, it will be the environment. America should be leading. And we're not. And that's another issue when you go back to this election is, you know, it's scary if you think as a people, we're going to put somebody back into the White House who doesn't believe in global warming. This world needs America. You know, one of his craziest lies is that people love him all over the world. I run a global business. People are scared all over the world. Like, people are counting on America. We all breathe the same air. We all drink the same water. The environment matters. We need to move faster. And if Americans prioritize the environment, there's a lot of people around the world who will follow suit. And I go into that in the book.
Yeah, that is absolutely critical, just as it's critical from a national security perspective, right? The environment relates there, right? We're seeing immigration at all new high. We're going to have people fleeing countries because they will be underwater. So heard, John. We got just a few minutes left. I wondered if you wanted to make an endorsement on the air and tell folks who you're voting for, and if not, if you want to speak to independent swing voters and business-minded conservatives as the guy that runs the global business known as Trek Bicycles. Folks, John Burke.
Yeah, so I took a look at this, and if you go to aboldplan.com, you can download the book for free there. I really want to educate people. And when I wrote the book, I said we basically have two problems. We have poor leadership. And one that I came across is we actually have poor citizenship. Great citizenship is knowing the issues and it's voting. And I think that's important. I've taken a look at this whole thing, and I think this is every election is a critical election. But this is not Romney and Obama. This is not a standard election. This is a pivotal election in history. And I said, you know what? I think Donald Trump disqualifies himself for all American voters. And there are three reasons I came to that. First of all, almost half of his staff in his cabinet had said, no, don't put this man back in the Oval Office. These people know 100 times more than you and I. If I was going to look at people and I was going to call their references, if we call Trump's right. references, half of them are saying, don't do it. The second thing is, and we've talked about this earlier, his lies are of immense proportion. They're way beyond what anyone else is saying. And the third point is history. If you take a look at anyone who rates the presidency and they rate Republicans and Democrats about half and half out of the top 10. Take a look at the bottom And they put Trump close to the bottom, fourth to last.
Folks, that's John Burke. That's John Burke, president of Trek Bikes. John, will you come back? Because I want to do this again really soon. I'm Maggie Dawn. Dom Salvia is up next. Remember, I'll stand up for you. I hope you stand up for me. But it's always better when we stand together as citizens in this democracy. Thanks, John. Really appreciate your time, sir.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.